Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration on the Live Paranormal Radio Network and iHeartRadio.com. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 28-year talk radio host. I'm a creative and performing artist, and I come to you live from my home in Southern California every Wednesday at 3 o'clock Pacific time. This show is an outreach of a nonprofit movement of peace and love and kindness and unity that I started in 2016, really to carry on my mom's teachings after she had passed. Called RaisingTheVibration.org. And if that movement's cornerstones are peace and love and kindness and unity, then this show is really about ascension, evolvement, inspiration, and love. Basically, what are you doing to raise your own vibration? What is your place in the world? What is your passion? What is your service? How is that leading to your overall evolvement? And then most importantly, what are you doing with those things to inspire others and to throw a lot of love into the world and make it a better place? That's what we talk about on this show. Every week I gather folk that I believe to be the brightest and the loveliest and the most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in all of my communities, the entertainment community, the spiritual community, the paranormal community, the world of give back. And we talk about what are we doing to make the world a better place? How are we putting our own gifts and talents into service to make everything better for everyone? So my guest today is wonderfully talented, a performer, an advocate, an activist, a person of faith, all these things. I learn more and more about her all the time. We recently were guests together, well, on a show that I co-host, Between the Sheets. She was our guest, and I was just so blown away with her that I think I stalked her to get her here. And I should use the proper pronouns because Robin, are you now using the wonderful Robin Tyler's here? Robin, are you now using they them?
No, she.
What do you use? What do you like? You use she? Okay, that's what I thought. That was what I did. I thought on Between the Sheets you had said something different.
No. I'm a butch. I'm basically non-binary, but I've been a feminist all my life, and so I'm very proud of being a woman, and, you know, she is. When you say they, you know, if I say, like, if you invite me for dinner and I say they, you may think two people are coming. So I'm very.
Or six. Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm exactly like you. So I'm an intersex person. So I guess genetically I'm non-binary, and I have absolutely no problem with that. But I am also a feminist, and I'm so proud to be a part of the female world. And I feel like, you know, I'm such a defender of women's rights and such an advocate for that. I just don't have any urge to switch over. I'm perfectly happy being a she, her, although I know on the inside I'm just whatever. And that's okay too, because being a spiritual person, I think our souls are pretty much not gendered. So I understand we do that on the earth, but I think on the inside, we're all a mixture of divine feminine, divine masculine, and that's beautiful.
Yes, I agree.
And I was very fascinated because I know how talented you are as a performer, and I know how brilliant you are as an activist and an advocate for your communities. But one thing I didn't know until we were on Between the Sheets together was that you said, I believe that above all things, you consider yourself to be a Jewish person.
Yes, I do. Because, you know, Jews are 2% of the population in the United States, but we're 50% of the religious hate crimes. And so, and I also, I'm 81 years old. I was born during the war, the World War II. And when it was over, I distinctly remember it, even though I was a child, everybody crying and everything. It's one of my first memories. And so I do identify as being Jewish. I think being Jewish is what has stimulated me all of my life to being an activist.
I think that's beautiful. Some of my biggest work as an interfaith minister is to help people to realize that you don't have to give up the faith that you love in order to expand your horizons and be something else. That it makes me so sad. One of the saddest things in the world to me, one of the main reasons that I wanted to be a pastor at Founders MCC was that it makes me so sad when people in the queer community feel like because they are gay, lesbian, bi, trans, intersex, plus, they no longer can like anything about the faith that they grew up in, or they're not allowed to have any faith at all.
I don't blame them because a religion has been used as a battering ram for gay people. You know, they were told they were sick, and religion, science told them they were sick. Religion told us we were sinful, and even today, religion, especially the fascist Christianity that's happening among the right wing, is used as a battering ram. So I understand why they ran from it. You know, I remember being Jewish, going to a synagogue, very young, and the women who had cooked all day and ironed the men's clothes and everything, they had to go up the stairs, upstairs, and the men went downstairs. And I thought, how unfair. The women have worked. They should be downstairs if you have to separate them, and the men should be walking upstairs. So basically, I'm a secular Jew. I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. But I don't believe Moses. First of all, Moses parted the water, and the first Jewish, if I had been there, I would have said, is it heated? That's all I want to know. So I don't believe in that, all the biblical, patriarchal, whatever it is. So when people run from religion, it's because it's been so bastardized,
I agree. And I don't blame them at all. But it makes me sad when they feel like maybe they're not a part of any kind, like God doesn't love them, or they can't be a part of any kind of spirituality because of that.
God is dog spelled backwards. So, and we know how, the whole point is I don't believe I'm the top of the intelligence chain. When you go and you see mountains and you see nature and you see all the wonderful things that, this whole, it came from somewhere and we didn't invent it. But wherever it came from, it doesn't matter to me. The point is not to destroy it. I think you're following in faith's footsteps if you're trying to save, if you're living a I don't know how to say it, but a respectful life, respectful of nature, respectful of each other. But the word religion in itself, I can't stand the word because of what it does to people.
Yeah, I agree. I much prefer faith. I think it's a more beautiful word because to me, faith means you've kind of carved out your own spiritual palette of the things that resonate with you. And that's perfectly okay. And then if you still want to identify as Jewish or Christian or whatever you want, I don't want anybody to feel like they have to throw out every childhood good memory they ever had with the bad memories. And I never want anyone to feel like they don't belong somewhere. But I think what we're meant to do is to carve out the things that mean something to us, to find our own way to God, whether it's nature, for some people it's the ocean, for some people it's music or theater. When I'm in a church growing up as an actor, for me, theaters are church, comedy clubs are church. All the places in my life where I have gathered to help to heal people, to me, all those places are churches.
Well, and a lot of times when you're backstage, like at the Comedy Store, whether they believe or not, the first thing they say when they're walking on stage is, oh, God, I hope I'm funny tonight.
Right. Exactly. God, please help me not to suck.
Right. That's right.
Absolutely
right.
True.
My most controversial routine that I've ever done, you'd think it would be I put out an album in 78 called Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom, which was the story of my life as a lesbian. And it's a, It's the first, it's in the Smithsonian now, but it's all about coming out to my mother and all. And you'd think that this would have been the most controversial, but it wasn't. The most controversial routine I ever did was the birth of the baby Jesus, where I play Mary, who was a Jewish mother giving birth to a Jewish child, and just painting the whole thing as Jewish. I did this in humor, but just doing the whole thing, it's not making fun of, it's just making, it's like a Jewish family, right? You know, so
yeah.
like when Mary, when, you know, Joseph found the barn, she made him go out and get Lysol and cleanser, and he came back and he cleaned and cleaned and cleaned that barn until it was immaculate. And that's how, that's how people got married. That was immaculate regarding the conception. So you see, so I explain how everything happened, but it's controversial because if at all you have humor or you challenge anything that may at all interfere with this ghastly blueprint that people have been given, you know, feel guilty, you know, you sin, your little baby, he died for your sins, you're like, what, one minute old and you're a sinner already? That whole thing has to be changed around. It's not spiritual. And my most controversial,
no.
And Lenny Bruce too. Lenny Bruce got arrested not for saying dirty words, because Red Fox and all of the people in Harlem that did the party records, the comics, they used dirty words. Lenny Bruce got arrested because he challenged the Catholic.
Yeah. Did I lose you?
Did lose you.
Hang on, everybody. We're getting Robin back. That's what happens when you talk about the Catholic Church. Okay, here we go. We're getting her back right now. There we go. Robin, welcome back. I was just laughing and saying that's what happens when you question the Catholic Church, the call drops.
That's very funny. That's very funny. Anyway, so you have to think, can I be an activist and still believe in something? Sure. Can you hear me,
yeah,
by the way? You can believe in freedom. You can believe in, yeah, I can hear you. You can believe in freedom. You can believe in love. You know, you can be passionate. I mean, to me, all the love is coming from the people that are struggling to be heard and to be free.
I agree 100%. I also think as an activist, you have to be an optimistic activist. I think when you're involved in activism and you see all of the ugliness in the world, it's very easy to get sort of sucked into that ugliness and it becomes your everyday life. And I think you always have to envision hope and envision what could be in a positive way, or your whole life just becoming enveloped by the crisis, right?
Well, yeah, I've never looked at it. I've looked at it as this giant door that's been shut to us, and we have to kick it open. And it's a wonderful experience to be able to have passion. Passion is better than Prozac, you know? And so I didn't ever look at it as depressing that we had no rights. I looked at it as a challenge. I was put here on earth for a reason, and this is my challenge. And so, you know, everybody feels like right now it's very hard on people between inflation and what's happening, you know, with the Republican Party and Trump. And you can look at everything in Ukraine. So everything seems like too much. So I always say, if there's a mountain full of shit and it looks like too much for you to handle, if everybody just picks up one teaspoon, we can do it. But we have to do it together. And that's called a movement.
Yes.
So you know, we get isolated in thinking that all the responsibility is on us as individuals. It's not. You know, it's the perfect. What's great about activism is you get a chance to join a group. You meet new friends. You get a chance to participate. You don't have to isolate. You don't. You know, I used to say in the 70s, people were dancing their way to isolation through a disco beat, and now we think somehow that the iPhone is connecting us. What really connects you is the same vision and fighting for that vision.
Yes, yes. And if all of us who whose communities have been oppressed in some way, right? If women and people of different faiths and religions and differently abled people and people in the queer community, if we could all get together and just say we're done, that would be the end of the patriarchy, because there's more of us than there are of them. Even women, right? There are more women on the earth than there are men. If every woman said this is done, then it would instantly be done. But yet,
yeah, but not going to happen, because because most of them have been sold on patriarchal values. Phyllis Schlafly, that's what she did. She stopped the ERA. Wasn't really her. The insurance companies were behind her. It was a huge pushback by the insurance company using her as the vessel. But people had no idea what they were fighting. They were fighting corporations, because equality for women is not good for the bottom end of business.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Am I being too deep?
No. Honey, first of all, you can't go too deep on this show, so you just keep going and I'll keep following. I always worry I'm going to be too deep, so you're fantastic.
This is a spiritual scuba dive.
We're going down.
Yeah.
If we get the bends on the way up, I'll see you in the compression chamber. definitely. I agree with you, and I think that is the saddest thing for me about being a woman and being a feminist and being a person of a spiritual person, is that here I see this solution that could be so easy, but women are so busy sometimes trying to, fight with other women and criticize other women and hold other women back, that we could fix the problem to all the things we say we want the answers to, and yet we're not. And that even within the queer community, it makes me very sad when, gays don't like lesbians and they don't like each other, and then nobody likes bisexual people, and people like trans people, but sometimes we don't like trans people. Nobody knows what in the world intersex people are. I can stop a train with that word. Everybody's if we just all said, look, we're all in the same boat. We all are part of this community, even our allies. Let's all get together and fight as one force of good. We could get so much more done. But even the inner fighting within marginalized communities is so huge, right?
Well, because when you just give people, you have to tell them they all have to share a little bit. So everybody fights, everybody. They did an experiment, when crabs try to crawl out of a barrel and they pull each other down. So basically,
yes.
If you're coming from the politics of less rather than more, there's enough for everybody. There's enough joy, equal rights for transgender people, whom I love and totally support as a radical feminist, doesn't take away. It's like people, when my partner, my late wife Diane, and I fought for marriage rights, they said somehow we would hurt straight marriage, right? How would we hurt their marriage? The only thing that's going to hurt straight marriage is divorce. So when women who are feminists say trans women will take away women's rights, well, what's that got to do with us? The more the merrier, trans women will fight for women's rights. So this whole thing about sort of fighting each other or having to argue over the minutia, then you forget the big picture. And the big picture is the Arctic is melting. Global warming is coming much quicker than you thought. There's going to be huge migration because people will be unable. There's huge migration at the border. It didn't just happen because people want to come to the States. It's happening because they can't grow their crops. And they can't feed themselves, and the fascism is setting in because of what's happening in the world. And so we're either going to have to pay attention to world problems, or there's going to be, I used to do a routine. Every 10 years, we should move one country up. So like if this were our ninth year in the States, next year we all move to Canada, and we start over again. Canada moves to the Arctic. The Arctic moves to Russia. So
right.
Rather than invading other countries, let's just all move every 10 years. And then we have to start again and, learn a new language, get a new job. It'll be fabulous. And it'll end war because we don't have to invade anywhere. Russia will be in Ukraine, but then, whoever borders Russia, who borders Russia? There's a huge border. Is it Sweden? Whoever will step into Russia. And that's all. So we just have to, It's like musical chairs, but with countries.
Right, right. No, I think that's fantastic. I dread moving, so it terrifies me. But I do think it's a fantastic idea that we have
just
to.
Just like I believe in discrimination, right? People want to discriminate. So what we'll do is every year we'll pick another astrological sign. This year it'll be Leos. Leos can't teach school. Leos can't marry each other. Leos, you know, Leos make 59% of the pay. And then the next year it becomes Aries. And that way you only get shit on once every 12 years. And during the 11 years where you're not being discriminated, you're nicer to the astrological sign because you know your time is coming. So that's sort of my answer to discrimination. It's sort of non-discrimination. It crosses age, race, everything. We just get to shit on an astrological sign.
Go for it. Yeah, that's great. You know, I have a theory about
what
that.
What sign are you? What sign are you?
I'm an
Me
Aries.
Me too. All right. So it's not going to be us.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's coming for us next. Now we know it's coming for us next.
Coming for us next.
Where are you in Aries? When's your birthday?
April 8th.
Oh, I'm the 2nd, so we're close. Yeah. Yep.
You
I kind of feel like I think we're very misunderstood. I kind of feel like it's always time to pick on the Aries sometimes.
Nah, I don't even care. I never look at what people think of me. You know, April 2nd is next to April 1st, which is April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
Fool is great. Fools were the people that used to tell the king and queen what was going on, like jesters.
Absolutely.
But they did it in comedy, hoping they wouldn't be careless. You know, they wouldn't be... what is it called?
Yes.
Right,
murdered.
They're beheaded for telling them, right, for telling them. So
exactly.
They use comedy. So gestures are
exactly.
Really like the political weathermen of the old days, you know. Excuse me, your majesty, there's an invasion at the left gate, you know. That's a fool.
That's fantastic, yes. Please don't cut off my head or lock me in the tower.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said about what you've been saying about moving every 10 years with countries and the astrological. I've always kind of felt like when a president becomes elected, they should renounce their party. While you are the president, you are the president for the people. You are no longer a Democrat or a Republican. I know that gets kind of dicey when reelection time happens, but while you're in office, you're for the people. And I've always felt that way. I know that's probably not a very popular idea, but
Well, you're supposed to, but it doesn't matter anyway, because we're a corporocracy. We're run by corporations now. Corporations are in control. I would much rather have Biden than, I'd rather have an aunt than Trump. I mean, I'd rather have anything, my pug than Trump. But I'd rather have a Democrat in office just because over the years they've shown that they don't want to cut Social Security and stuff like that. So I don't believe they should. You know, it sounds great to say you represent everybody, but I think the Republican Party is so right-wing now that I don't want them to represent them. Screw them. Screw representation.
Yeah.
Represent us, you know?
That's
right, how I
exactly.
feel.
I agree with you 100%, and I think whoever the president is, when they take that oath of office, they are now representing everybody on the earth. Everybody in the country, the whole country, not just the Democrats, the Republicans, the rich, the poor, that is their job. You know, I have this, I love Abraham Lincoln. I know he's a Republican, but it's very different back then. I love him so much. And one of the things I love about him the most is that he used to open up the White House a couple of days a week, and he would just sit there and people would line up and come through and tell him their problems, like, my husband died. I don't know what to do. I can't make my rent this month. My barn burned down. But he would work to find solutions for all of them. Imagine if that was still a thing, when you could line up and the president would help you through your problems. I think that's the most beautiful thing. I understand that was a different time when, you know, you could get closer to people, and then poor Lincoln, what happened to him for going to the theater. But, you know, there's such a
Did you know that Abraham Lincoln slept in the same bed, a single bed, with another man for 8 years?
Yep. Yep.
You know, Abraham Lincoln was gay. No.
You need to sleep
with your bodyguard in a single bed, you think? You think?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about that, right, was that was his law partner. that when Abraham Lincoln became president, his law partner shut down his practice to become his bodyguard and then slept in the same bed with him to protect him. That's a love story,
yes,
right? It's a love story.
Right. That was his husband.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But that's a sweet story, that you would love somebody so much that you would give up your life to go be with them and go from lawyer to bodyguard just to
unless
be with the
that,
person
no,
you love.
Unless it were a woman with a man, and then we'd call it patriarchal, and how could she give up everything?
Right.
You know, I've had the privilege of loving someone like every love story from every movie. I love someone, Pat Harrison, for 55 years, and I've experienced the depth of that kind of love where you would give up anything, including your life, to save that person, that you love them so much. I managed to experience that, and so when I talk about what my greatest achievement is, it's not producing the marches on Washington or the main stages or the women's festivals or the comedy albums, all of the stuff I've done. It was loving Pat Harrison. It was being able to love that deeply.
I heard you say that when we did Between the Sheets together, and I was so moved by that. Love is the most important thing in the world, and for you to say that with the success that you've had in the entertainment world and as well-known as you are in the world of activism, for the most important thing in your life to be this beautiful love of this person, I can't even tell you how that moves me. The world would be a much different place, my friend, if we all thought like that.
Or if we all had the opportunity to be able to love. I mean, a lot of times people don't. You know, remember when gay people said love is love? That was the best thing that we ever invented, love is love, because it took it off of sexual politics. And, you know, it's not a movement from the waist down. We're talking about love. And it brought it up to what it was, and it's about loving somebody, which is, you know, a miracle.
Yeah, yeah. When did you know with her? When did you know that she was your it person, your forever person, the one everybody looks for?
I was a female impersonator at the 82 Club. I was the only woman in the show. I did Judy Garland. You had to really sing, you know, the real voice. And I looked down and I saw this woman and she was the most, I had moved to New York because I thought I'd meet Audrey Hepburn, right? All lesbians look like Audrey Hepburn in my little brain. That's because I saw Breakfast at Tiffany's. And then when I looked down, there was Audrey Hepburn, except it was Pat Harrison. She looked like her. She had the same haircut. But it was Patty. And I walked over, I walked off stage and I walked up to her and I said, I just want you to know that I'm going to marry you and be with you the rest of my life. I didn't know her. And, of course, her lover that she was with, Rachel, didn't take it very well. But that's what happened. I just said, that's it. So that's why, I don't know, you know, I don't know if we have past lives or other lives or whatever, but somehow I just walked and I said to this strange woman, it wasn't because she was gorgeous. It was because I knew her. It was like I had known her for centuries. And I walked in and I said, we're going to be together forever. I've been waiting for you.
But
isn't
don't
that
you believe
odd?
That that's past life thing? I mean, I really do, that your souls have traveled from life to life together, and they will travel again the next time. And
I never thought about it.
Like,
right, but I never thought about it before this. I was a female impersonator. I went to jail for impersonating a woman. So it wasn't like I was a deep thinking, you know, I just wanted to get a job and make $150. So I never thought about the depth of, do I know somebody in another life or do we go on? I never thought, I just thought, can I make a living and, you know, feed myself? And then when I walked over to her, I knew that that was it for the rest of my life. But I never thought about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
While you were together, did you begin to think things like that? Did you ever have, like, flashes of maybe the two of you in a different time period?
No, because we did so much in this life. We stopped at Rams, we had a football game. We went to Vietnam and came back and did anti-war shows. We did so much in this life that we didn't have time to think about past lives. But we were so in sync that there had to be something. Do you know what I mean? was like we were just totally in sync. It doesn't have, not just as lovers, you know, we were lovers for 11 years, but for the whole time together, it was like, it was history repeating itself, but we never thought about it or dialogued about it. We just, you know, when you're in the movie, you assume it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We didn't analyze it. I remember once everybody was going to go, everybody was going, the feminist movement, to take on the Salvation Army because they were anti-gay and they were really, you know, women weren't treated well. So we went out and we found this woman ringing a bell. And instead of, and we said, oh, it's Christmas time. We can't go and protest this woman, Salvation Army ringing a bell. So instead of protesting, we ended up singing Christmas carols with her and getting on the news. How could we protest? There's one little old woman, you know, with the little, you know, bucket. So sometimes you have to just, on the spur of the moment, know that whatever you were going to do, it's not right, and just sing Silent Night. That's it. By the way, when a woman is in labor, it is not a silent night. Obviously, that was written by a man. Okay.
Yes.
Silent night, holy night, oi, you know.
Exactly. All is calm. I said no woman
right.
who was giving a birth to ever.
Right. I do that routine on. I'm going to be on this Saturday here in Studio City. I can send it to you. It's their last LGBT program. There's a whole program. It's at a church, but it's all gay comics, LGBTIQ, whatever. And it's the last time they're doing it there.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'll send
what
it to you after.
It's
I'd have to look it up. It's in Studio City. I'll send it to you.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. How often do you do comedy shows now? You were in Palm Springs recently, weren't you? Or you're about to go?
Yeah, I did. I produced 4 shows in Palm Springs, and I was one of them. I don't do comedy that often. I'd rather be a producer than a comic. I'd rather be Barnum than the elephant. So I don't have the need to, like, express myself through humor, except when things are really bad, like now, with, you know, the what's happening and the pushback and everything. I have to get on stage because it's a release. Because I'm a political comic.
Right, right. Absolutely. Do you, what do you look for in someone that you produce? Do they have to have
talent.
A message that resonates?
No. Okay. Talent. Like, I love, I don't know if you know Karen Williams. She's a black comic and with a specific point of view. Very brilliant, brilliant comic. I produced her. Fiona Goodwin is a very British lesbian. That's a totally different
right.
point of view. And then there's
right.
an Australian one, Jackie Loeb, that I think is brilliant, and she's from Australia. So as long as their point of view is funny and it reflects what they are. I mean, I hate Dave Chappelle, the fact that he makes fun of, he's not only transphobic, but he also said anti-Semitic things in his show. So I'm no fan of Dave Chappelle. And as much as I don't like him, I don't like his audience even. If I turned around and I did the jokes on him, and I changed the jokes to being black instead of gay or trans or Jewish, I would be killed because it's not acceptable. Racism is not acceptable. Yet in humor, homophobia still is, transphobia still is, and a little anti-Semitism thrown in is kind of acceptable. So I should just take his act and turn it around and then say it's his act. You know what I mean? So, and he makes $20 million. That's what they pay him, Netflix, for his show. Whereas, who I love and I'm a big fan of is Wanda Sykes. If anybody has Netflix and you haven't seen Wanda, she's so funny.
Yeah, I think she's wonderful, and I think the new special is wonderful.
Yeah,
I think she's Yes, I think it's. I think it was wonderful. Mm. I think I saw it because you talked about it on Facebook, and I saw it on one of my streaming. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch this for a minute. And then I wound up watching the whole thing. I think that I like comics that are very funny, but not at someone else's expense. You don't have to be funny at someone else's expense.
Well, first of all, if you punch down, it's easy to punch down. Anybody can get a laugh from punching down. The idea is to take on that which oppresses us or bothers us and punch up, and that's greatness. Everything else is just, you know, trashy humor. You know, the sexist jokes. I remember the Comedy Store. They did a big tribute to the Comedy Store, the main room. Well, mostly it was sexist jokes, rape jokes, you know. So I think that somebody like Wanda, that my favorite routine of hers was when she was going to the bathroom, because that was pushing. Nobody had ever done it before. And this is on her latest special. And I thought just a woman in a restroom was so funny. No, and it was so specific. I just thought she was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I love that that you work with Fiona Goodwin, who, you know, is one of my favorite people. I adore her. That she has, she brings such a beautiful pathos and heart to her humor. It's like funny, but at the same time, it's also making you feel something. And I love that as well. When there's a soul
behind
it.
When I saw her for the first time, I started to cry when it was over, and I said, "You're the closeted lesbian that I worked all of my life for to bring out." I said, "You are the you're who I finally met one person that embodied everything that I was working for by telling her story on stage." She's and you know, good comedy also, like Lily Tomlin or great comedy, Charlie Chaplin. They can mix pathos and humor, and that's what Fiona does. Fiona's able to go from pathos and, you know, being going through making it funny that they gave her an exorcism. Can you imagine? To being funny. So I think that's what makes her brilliant.
Yeah, she's a regular guest on all of my shows, and I love her as a person, and I've always loved having her with me in a creative situation. I just think she's a beautiful spiritual person with a beautiful heart. And I like that when I interview her, she's okay, as you are, to bring her heart out for everyone to see and also be funny. Because I think we think those two things are mutually exclusive. And they really shouldn't be, because I think when you're doing comedy or when you're doing a comedic, a one-woman show that's funny and also moving and also sad at times, that's life, right? Life can be tragic one minute and then hysterical the next minute. And, you know, I grew up with an Irish mother who had been through like everything you can imagine from the Depression forward. And she always said, like, "We're just going to keep laughing, kid. So no matter how bad it got, we found a way to laugh." And that's a healing mechanism. People go to see comics to get a little bit of healing. But I think it's good when they get a little bit of reality with their healing, because they walk away with a different perspective. Like you said, instead of just going and the entire thing is just the low ball jokes over and over again.
Right.
I think the face of comedy is changing.
Well, there's different. It depends what decade. I used to do a lecture on the history of comedy as it relates to the civil rights movement. And in the 60s, you had, you know, black people fighting back. So we went from Flip Wilson to Richard Pryor and Paul Mooney and people that were, you know, unable to express their anger through comedy. And in the 70s, you had Women's Liberation. So you went from, and I love all the women comics. You know, humor is the most aggressive medium there is. And the only time women were allowed to be humorous is if they turned that aggression on themselves. So we went from that kind of aggression on ourselves, Phyllis Diller, you know, Fang and all this stuff, and Joan Rivers, all these people who were brilliant, successful comics, but all of a sudden along came Elaine Boozer, who's a brilliant comic and a feminist, and Lotus Weinstock, and it switched around. In the 80s, we all of a sudden the gay liberation movement came out, right? So we went from I remember playing Catch a Rising Star. And David Letterman? No, it was one of the guys that ended up his own TV show. He did a faggot joke, and the whole audience there, three quarters of them were gay men to see me. So they stopped them and they said, "You can't, you know, get off the stage." And he was backstage crying, and I said, "Look, you can't. It's not funny anymore. No one's going to sit and watch you, you know, do anti-gay jokes." And so in the 80s, once we became a movement, it, you know, we started to fight back when anybody made fun of us. So, and then, you know what the 90s, the movement were, believe it or not? The right wing. Then you had all of these rednecks. You're a redneck, you know, like if you,
right.
All the redneck jokes, because that's what was reflected in the 90s. So it's interesting watching everything reflect what's happening now. And but the one thing is a comic has to do is tell their truth in order to be good. Even if we don't like that truth, it has to be their truth.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting that sometimes comics, whatever the current presidential administration is, there'll be a group of comics that will rise up against that. So you found those sort of redneck comics during the Democratic administrations, and you found
right.
very liberal comics rising up during the very conservative administration.
Right. Well, sometimes having your choice between Democrats and Republicans is like having your choice between syphilis and gonorrhea. So that's a joke.
Right.
So sometimes you have to look and say, what have they accomplished really for me, although I'm a Democrat? But I'm saying, yeah, the anger rises up. I thought the redneck comics were very interesting, and a lot of them did not make fun. They weren't racist or sexist, but they talked about being a redneck and growing up in Appalachia, and
yeah.
and it was very – and it was funny, you know? It
yeah.
was funny.
Yeah. They made fun of themselves. And,
yeah,
And I think that they gave a more – in doing so, they gave a more human face to that area of the country. I think
right.
it's really important, and I've seen this a lot, and I talk about this in my, you know, almost 30 years in radio. It's so important that we not become the person that then makes fun of, like, oh, all people from the South are bad. You know, it's very
right.
easy to fall into this thing where we as liberal people become stereotypers as well. And it's so important that we don't do that. Lovely places in the South. They're lovely people in the South. They're lovely people in the Midwest. Everybody in a certain region isn't bad. Because that, Robin Wright, just promotes the us and them mentality. And that's how
we get into
a lot of trouble as human beings.
I used to produce the Southern Women's Music and Comedy Festival in Georgia, in White County, Georgia. Only we called it White, You Better Believe It, County, Georgia. And and 2,000 lesbians came, and they were Southern, you know, from the South. And it's different, you know, it's very hard. The only fight we ever had with them is when one of my West Coast coordinators put garlic in the grits. That was like a second Civil War. But other than that, once they all started, you know, it was very interesting. And we ended up, that became my favorite festival, was the Southern Festival. So, you know, and from there, they started other women's festivals in Mississippi, and as they broke off from the Southern Festival, and they started them all over in the 80s, which helped organize people. So now there's not, you know, we all want the same things. We want safety and equality and whatever. It's just, you know, different accents, same civil rights movement.
Yes, I agree 100%. And my hope is that someday we can evolve enough as a species that we can be unified, and as a country that we can be more unified. I know it seems now like things are getting more divisive. You know, I think there's that Aries optimism, right? We just sometimes...
Well, the only thing that's ever unified us was World War II, for instance. And even that, there were a group of fascists here led by a congressman. Rachel Maddow did a whole series on it. That didn't want to fight Hitler. But basically, when you have a common enemy or a common goal, you're unified. I don't know if it'll happen anymore in the States, because we're basically becoming, we're not remaining a white country. We're becoming a brown country. And I think those of us that want to hold on to the 50s, to where we're, you know, where women couldn't have their own credit card and whatever, and it was a white country, I think they're going to hold on like mad to try to bring it back to that. And that's half the country. So I think there really is. I would like to say, oh, if we all could only believe together, get over it. We can't. So
right,
they won't.
Right. I think we're in for the fight of our lives. I hope after that, things will begin to get better. Because I think a lot of things in history ebb and flow. And we're definitely in an ebb in this country. And I do agree with you. Let me ask you an odd question, and you know, if it's not okay to answer, tell me no. As a Jewish person, do you consider yourself to be a person of color?
When you say person of color, I don't consider myself to be white. But when you say person of color, you think of black and brown. But Jewish is like, and the reason I don't consider myself to be white is neither do the Proud Boys. Do you know what I mean? So we're definitely other. We're definitely, I think of myself as the other. And, because I am, to them, I am the other. So, it's, I think a lot of times we don't have the same discrimination because it's, overt discrimination, like not hiring for a job and this or that. Although it's interesting because, I mean, even in the 50s, did you see Gentleman's Agreement with Gregory Peck? It was when a reporter who's not Jewish all of a sudden says he's Jewish and everybody changes toward him. This is the 50s. Long ago, you know. Do I think of myself as a person of color? No, although I'm pink. But I do think of myself as the other, you know, because to them I'm the other.
Yeah.
And I'm too busy running the banks I have to hang up now, so I have to go run all the banks and the entertainment industry and the television industry. You know, it's really a busy day for me. So, and that's what they think of Jews still, you know.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, growing up Irish and with my mother growing up in an Irish slum in Louisville, Kentucky during the war, during the Depression, there's a part of growing up that way that you feel other as well. I mean, certainly I'm as pale can be, but the history of our people in this country has not been one of acceptance, and it's still there are times when I tell people I'm Irish and I get that look like, oh, you know, like I've got 20 rusting cars on my lawn and I have 17 children all with different daddies.
I didn't know that's the prejudice against the Irish.
Oh God, yeah.
I thought it was red hair.
Oh no, you know in the 1800s the signs that said no Irish or dogs. And Irish need not apply. My grandfather had an Irish need not apply sign, and he used to say that in the early part of the 20th century, that people would just, you know, what are we going to do tonight? Oh, you know, let's go out and find a mix. Oh yeah, there was a definite less than. You ever seen Gangs of America, Gangs of New York? I mean, the Irish immigrants were treated as below everybody on the earth. And so it makes me very angry when people go, oh, I'm Irish, and then they fill out some, you know, Trumpian rhetoric, and I'm like, wow, you know nothing about the history of your people, because many of us were brought over here as indentured servants, which we all know what indentured servant meant in this country, including my ancestors came as indentured servants. So, you know what I mean? We need to think about history. People need to think about history and realize
where my ancestors weren't allowed to land on the ship. You know, the Exodus, there was the Exodus. So they weren't allowed to even come into the country. And the Canadian Prime Minister during the war said, if he let one Jew in, that was one Jew too many.
Yeah.
In Canada. But anyway, but you know, why let little things get us down? You know? I think the fact that we've been able to overcome prejudice in our personal lives should make us all the stronger fighting other people's prejudice, you know?
100%. I agree 100%. And I think that that's that optimism that I'm talking about. And I don't know about you, but as an Aries, for me, I seem to have an incredible ability to reset in hope on a regular basis. And I think that because if we don't, then we're lost, right? Hope is what we have to believe that we can be happy in our lives, the world will get better, we will get better. You have to believe. You don't have to be a Pollyanna about it, but you do have to believe that there is hope and there is good times and there is good stuff. And I think it's so important to keep positive.
I think keeping positive is a privilege. I think that I'm positive, you know, because I'd rather be, I don't want to be depressed. So I look at how many things we've accomplished, what we have. But I think for people that have to work two jobs or three jobs and not feed their kids and all of this other stuff, I don't think we can say to them, oh, if only you had a sunny disposition. I think we're privileged in that we're able to say, you know, we're able to choose this kind of life. But I also think we need to constantly work at trying to lift other people up, because life is very hard on the majority of people now that can't make a living. You can't buy a house anymore. You know, a house in L.A. now, the average house is $750,000. Who the hell makes that kind of money? So I think on one hand, we can be hopeful, but on the other hand, we have to use our privilege to help with their position, to lift them.
I completely, you know, the interesting thing is, Robin, that often if you talk to those people who are working three or four jobs and just scraping by and trying to figure out how they can not pay the electric bill so they can pay the gas bill, they will oftentimes tell you about how lucky they are for the things that they have. I think sometimes with privilege comes complacency, and then you start to think about all the things in your life you don't have. Folks that are really in it, struggling and present, oftentimes will tell you what's wonderful about their life. In the same way that, you know, sometimes somebody will get in an accident, they'll become a quadriplegic, and you think, oh, this person has every reason in the world to be miserable, and they're the one telling you how happy they are to wake up every day. You know, sometimes I think that that struggle gives a perspective.
I think so, but I also think that I don't know how to say this. We only have a few minutes left. I think that we should, I don't know, I think it's great that we can be happy and we can be up and we can be passionate. I don't expect it of everybody else. I just think people need help. Possibly it's because of, I don't know, it's just, it would be great if we were Pollyanna, but the fact is a lot of the world is in trouble. So my happiness comes from trying to help. That's all. It's not an abstract thing. All of a sudden I wake up and the light goes on. You know, my well-being comes out of being involved, not just a light bulb turning on.
I agree. That's how you stay positive, I think. You think about where you can help today. Where can I help today?
Right.
Where can I help tomorrow? And that's where the hope comes from.
I agree.
That's beautiful.
Should we end on that?
You are wonderful, my friend. Thank you so much for being here. Where can find you? People can find you online?
They can find me on Facebook. And also, if they want to, let me see if I can do this without cutting you off. If they're in Los Angeles on Saturday, let's see. On Saturday, remember I said we were going to be at a church? It's going to be 7:30 p.m., Unitarian Universalist Church of Studio City, 12355 Moorpark Street, Studio City. All right, Studio City, it's in the valley, and there's no charge to get in. It's a whole bunch of LGBTI, whatever, comics, and it's the final show. So come and laugh, get involved, and say hello.
I'd love that. Thank you for being here, my friend. I'd love to have you back. You let me know when, and I appreciate doing this with me. Take care. The wonderful Robin Tyler, everybody. Such a joy to have her here. I am Sheena Metal, and I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. If you missed any of that info that Robin gave out, please feel free to go there. Everywhere on social media, I'm at Sheena Metal. And until I see you next week, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity. Always work to raise your vibration and know that you are love and you are loved and you're especially loved by me. RaisingTheVibration.org, that's my nonprofit, and this show, RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, and of course, Paranormal.com and iHeartRadio.com and all of our affiliates. I'll see you next week on Raising the Vibration. You take care of you until then.